Welcome to the post-Bears game, post-game. I'm Rick Hogan. This show today is devoted, sometimes I never plan these things in advance, but it's devoted to writers and books. The first writer is in Palm Springs, and he has written his third mystery book. David Hamlin, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you, sir. How are you?
I'm good. I'm surviving, you know. I'm surviving. What's the last year and a half been like for you and your lovely wife? It's a question I ask everybody who I haven't talked to in a year and a half.
It has been as discombobulated as I think the rest of the world feels.
Yeah.
We're both healthy and we're both vaccinated. And while I checked with your producer, I discovered it's not necessary that I wear a mask to do this interview. So,
well, but it would be
I'm
fun.
Fine.
It would be fun. You must have masks in your house.
Oh, thousands of them.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I got them in every piece of clothing I own. David, you and your wonderful wife, Sydney Weissman, who in the book you refer to as, in a dedication, the muse who sings to me every day. It's not as if you miss Chicago, but the three books, these three Emily Winter mysteries, are all set in Chicago. Does that bring you back? Do you like sort of remembering?
Oh, absolutely. I knew when I started the first one that this had to be a Chicago series. The city is, for one thing, very media strong, so there was lots to draw on from that perspective.
Sure.
And the whole notion of being able to work in Chicago and still maintain a very cordial relationship with the city without being there struck
right.
me as particularly pleasant. So I'm always happy to go back to Chicago when I sit down at the keyboard.
Yeah, and you can, maybe it's even a tax write-off, for goodness sake, too, if you come back for a visit to check your memory. You trust your memory, and your memory is astonishingly good, I mean, as far as street corners and all that jazz. But in creating this character, who's a very compelling television news reporter, is she based as Emily Winter, who was the first book was Winter in Chicago, the second Winter Gets Hot, and this one is Killer Cocktail. Is she based? She obviously based on people you had known.
Well, there was a period of time in my life when I was in media a lot, not as an employee, but as a source and a newsmaker.
Sure.
And a lot of that occurred in Chicago, so I started with a kind of feeling for the rough and tumble way in which Chicago media operates.
Yeah.
And I knew either socially or professionally an awful lot of folks who worked in various media in Chicago. And in many ways they all sort of contribute to who Emily Winter is, but also who her professional colleagues are and the way in which she's now a television reporter, but right. the way in which television news operates in a time which, the more I think about it, the more I discover is very different from today's media.
Oh, no question. Is that maybe, that must be one of the reasons, certainly, David Hamlin, that you set this book in 1977.
Yes. Obviously, since the core story is about the bombing of an abortion clinic.
Right. An abortion clinic. It's a women's health center. And interesting to remember, because I certainly remember these years, too, that only, and I think it's in here somewhere, I can't find the right page to read it out loud, but, you know, 12% of all they do, of the many, many health services they provide, are abortions. And this comes, it's oddly, you couldn't have imagined how topical and timely this might be, could you?
I couldn't, and yeah. I have to admit that personally, I'm sorry that it turned out that way. I would like this issue to have been settled long ago.
Yeah.
But I wanted to. One of the things I was striving for here is Emily Winter does work in Chicago in the mid 1970s.
Yep.
And it seemed to me that looking back at early controversies that surrounded the Roe versus Wade decision in 73 would be a good frame in which to bring Emily and the media into that debate.
Yeah, there's no question. It's an inspired, frankly, it's an inspired choice. We got to take a short little break, David, and we'll come back with author David Hamlin, former Chicagoan, as is his lovely wife, Sydney Weissman, to talk about the... You know, the funny thing, David, I'm coming down the elevator about an hour ago in my building, and I'm holding your book, and someone who I didn't know, who sort of moved into the building relatively recently, goes, "Oh, my God, is that another book with Emily Winter?" And I said, "Yes." She goes, I read one of the early ones. Which one did I read?" And I named the one. She says, "It was Emily Winter in Chicago." And I was flabbergasted. That doesn't happen much anymore, to me at least. To me at least.
Well, so, it's certainly music to my ears.
It certainly should be. We'll be back after a couple commercials with David Hamlin, the author most recently of Killer Cocktail. I am on the phone from California with David Hamlin, the author most recently of Killer Cocktail. It's the third in his series. She was a newspaper reporter, Emily Winter, and now she's in television, and she's one of the sad things on page 95. They come to her, and the Team 8 News, she tells the listeners and viewers that you've learned exclusively that the death of Dr. Joan Estrada, the medical director at this women's clinic, occurred when one of two Molotov cocktails thrown into the building caused an oxygen tank to explode. That is one of the mysteries. The other mystery involves someone who is after Emily and her husband and her uncle. This is a pretty involved one, David, don't you think? Do you plot these out beforehand?
I do. Okay. I'm an enormous fan of the late and truly great William Goldman, Chicago writer himself. Goldman talks about whether he's writing fiction or building a screenplay. Talks about creating a spine, that is the essential straight line that is the basic story. I create that and then I stop. Because I want my characters to lead me where they believe they should go. Sure. And I want there to be a kind of natural flow which comes as the characters evolve. I deliberately wanted Emily to be under a threat because I wanted to create a different kind of feminist character to guide her through that threat.
Yeah.
And so I created KB for Chris Bryant, KB Constantine, who is one of the first women in Chicago to wear a uniform and walk a beat.
Yep. Yep. Wow. The thing about it, you know, characters evolving, when you... And I'm always fascinated with this. This entire show is devoted to writers, and I will ask Dmitry Samarov when he's sitting here some of the same when he dips into fictional characters. When you create and then, David, in your case, live with a character for three novels, how does that character grow for you? I mean, how does the voice of that character, does it become more resonant with you? Do you know more about the character, almost as if she's a living human being?
Well, I tell people that Emily and I are very close friends. I know her well, and one of the things I have tried to do in each of the three is to present her with similar but different professional challenges. So that in the first one, she's a radio news writer.
Yep.
In the second, she has graduated to television, but isn't doing hard news until she fights her way into that piece of the news action. And in the third, I wanted her to be a full-on, straight-ahead, hard news reporter, because I specifically wanted to deal with the, at least in the old days, the way in which a news story is effectively built with both integrity and honesty.
That is the old days. Yeah.
That's one of the reasons I set this one up the way I did.
Yeah.
There really is more to good journalism than simply taking a handout and then providing one's own opinion about what that handout might mean. Emily has to dig and dig hard to solve this story, mystery.
Yeah.
Specifically because there are a lot of people who simply don't want to cooperate with her because they don't like what she is reporting on.
Sure.
That's in the old days, good reporters found a way to work around a problem like that. These days, they simply shy at whoever doesn't cooperate with them and move on to the next story.
Yeah, there are a number of interesting suspects that you've created. They're the wealthy patron of the anti-abortion people, a real estate speculator, a sort of down-and-out former clinic employee. You do a wonderful job of creating and keeping people interested in whodunit, in a sense, of whodunit. Are you happy with this book, David? Do you feel more self-assured with each novel?
I think I do. I'm certainly more comfortable with the rhythm and pace of the work I do. I try and build in challenges for myself so that I freely admit that I'm a freshman, maybe a sophomore at this game.
Yeah.
So that I'm always looking for ways to learn more and reach a little further, and I think I did that in this book, and I'm quite happy with it. I must say it's and you're right. The heart of any mystery, of course, is whodunit.
Of course.
And in order to when I wrote the book, I knew from word one whodunit.
Yeah.
But finding ways to drop red herrings, to make the readers wonder if mm-hmm. what they think is the story is in fact the story. There's great fun in that, but it's also a terrific challenge for those of us who write in the mystery genre.
You have another one in you? Is this going to be a quartet of Emily Winter books?
Well, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I did very deliberately leave an opening at the end of this book for another Emily adventure. I suspect I will get back to her at some point. I'm currently just beginning to work on an entirely different set of circumstances in an entirely different community.
Fiction?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. And a mystery. I'm the world's biggest American mystery fan. I think it's a great pillar of literature in this country, and I delight in both reading and writing it.
So did the woman riding the elevator with me today. I am intrigued, David, and I haven't been able to get a hold of a copy of it. I'm intrigued by the book you wrote about the market in L.A., but I'm more intrigued by this Beacon Press 1980 book called The Nazi Skokie Conflict. How did that come about? I know you were for a long time an ACLU lawyer here, and I remember that conflict.
Well, I'm quick to correct you happily. I was actually ACLU's executive director.
Okay.
Gotcha. In part because it's probably a mistake to trust protection of civil liberties just to lawyers. I was executive director during the Skokie controversy. We endured an enormous amount of trials and tribulations along the way, and while the rest of the country, ACLU took a small hit, we took a very big hit. So
yeah.
In addition to fighting the good fight, we also had to fight to stay alive.
No question.
And I had written an article for a professional journal, a civil liberties journal, about the course of that case, and was contacted by someone in New York who thought it should be a book, and I Who am I to argue when someone thinks you should write a book?
Of course.
I'm going to be the first in line. So that's how that book came about.
Well, I'm going to dig up a copy because I was a very, very, very young reporter. I wasn't even a reporter. I was driving a cab and got in the middle of that whole thing. David, it is always a pleasure to talk to you. It's a greater pleasure, actually, to read you. And ladies and gentlemen, you don't have a website, do you, David?
I do. It is,
what is
www.dmhrights.com.
Wow. DMHrights.com. Go there, yep. Ladies and gentlemen, or just Google David Hamlin, H-A-M-L-I-N, and buy all three of his fantastic mysteries, his Emily Winter mysteries. You'll fall in love with this. She's a kid to me, David. She's a kid to me. Fall in love with this kid, and you'll be hooked on this great Chicago former Chicago and now a mystery writer. David, love to your wife, and
thank you,
and stay healthy and stay in touch.
Thank you, Rick. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
It is. Me too.
Good.